WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Here's Cook on third down to the end zone. It's a touchdown! Keith Mumphrey ties the game at 41.
Oh boy, does it feel good to be back or what? Man, it's kind of weird. I mean, 2 weeks off. And, you know, I'm back here on the air now, and it's like I gotta get back in that Current Sports mode, baby. But, man, oh, man, have I missed this chair? Have I missed this microphone? Have I missed being on the air with you all, folks? Yes, it's our very first fresh new Current Sports to start the new year, 2015. Hopefully you all out there are having a great start to your new year, folks. We've got a hot show in store for you today. Now, of course, we have to talk about Michigan State getting that huge win out in Dallas, Texas at Jerry World against Baylor in the Cotton Bowl. An historic game, one for the ages, a game that will be talked about for years and years to come, folks. We'll be chatting about that game, but yeah, was it a pass interference? Was it not? I think we can all agree that, yes, it was a pass interference. I think we all know that. You know the play I'm talking about. If you watched that Lions game yesterday, that was a pass interference, folks. We'll talk about that moment. It was a moment that, again, caused a lot of controversy. A moment that, again, I've never seen that happen. Never seen that happen. I've been watching football for a long, long time, folks. I have never seen a moment quite like that one in that Detroit Lions game. So we're going to chat about that game. I want to get your thoughts on it because, again, I was sitting there watching that game and Twitter just blew up yesterday from many Detroit Lions fans. Not even just fans. I mean, people who just were casually watching the game. You saw Michael Strahan, who is an NFL analyst for Fox. After that game, when he was sitting with Terry Bradshaw and Jimmy Jones, all those guys, just talking about that game and the aftermath of that game, he said, you know, hey, I feel for you, Detroit. I feel for you. Because that was a turning point in that game, a momentum shifter. But I've gone on the record many times here on the radio and even on the TV show in saying that I hate, if there's one thing I hate the most, I hate when the game is blamed and put on the referee's shoulders. Sure, it was a big call. A call that started or probably ensued into the demise of the Lions and losing that game yesterday. A call that was ridiculous. Again, I'd never seen it because what happens is, you know, that call happens and the refs come out and they say that it's a pass interference. And again, crucial point in the game, 20-17 at that point, midway through the fourth quarter, Lions are leading. Lions are threatening at this point. Stafford is sort of putting together a nice little drive. And initially, it's announced as a pass interference through the PA systems. And, I look down. I'm tweeting at the same time as this is going on. And I look back up, and in the top left corner of the screen, it says fourth down. And I'm sitting there like, hold on. Did they just call a pass interference? But again, the flag was picked up. It was ruled as face guarding. Again, there's no face guarding in the NFL. So again, it's not like it's, so I guess it's like it never even happened. And it goes to a fourth down. I just don't get that moment. But again, there's many of you blaming this loss on the shoulders of the referees when I personally have a bit of a different take on it. And you're going to get my thoughts on that. And again, we'll be taking your calls throughout this entire hour, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to get your thoughts on the Lions' loss. What did you think about it? And what do you take away? What do you take away from this season? Because I tell you what, the Lions turned a lot of heads and exceeded a lot of expectations this year. But again, we live in a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately society. What have you done in the playoffs lately? And let's be frank, the Lions haven't done much dating all the way back to 1991. So, what are your thoughts on it? 517-355-9527. We'll later on also have weekend winners for you. And also, we will talk about breaking news that occurred yesterday morning. News that shook the sports world. The sad passing of Stuart Scott. Dead at the age of 49, victim to cancer. We'll be talking about that as well, folks. But I want to start today's show by inviting our guest. His name is Rod Beard, Michigan basketball beat writer for the Detroit News. He also covers the Detroit Tigers and the Detroit Lions. Rod is going to give his thoughts on the Lions and so much more. Rod, my man, how you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
I am outstanding. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks a lot, Rod. Now, first, I want to get your thoughts on it. Again, I started today's show by no other than a way that I couldn't think and fathom no other way to start it. And by talking about the Detroit Lions, of course, that's the talk of the town right now. Everyone is talking about the quote-unquote pass interference no call that was called in the game but then taken away. I want to get your thoughts on that call, Rod, and how big of a momentum shifter was that call for you?
It's a huge shift because the Lions certainly had the momentum. They weren't in a position to kick a field goal immediately after that play, but they were driving. They hadn't scored a touchdown in the second half, and given that penalty, I think that would have given them a little bit more to be able to lead them toward even a field goal later on in that drive or potentially a touchdown. So given the timing of that, 8 minutes left in the game, I think it was big in terms of shifting the momentum the other way because the Lions didn't end up going for it on fourth down. Cowboys got the ball back after the punt and just things started rolling the other way. And momentum just shifts that way that you need one little small turn, and when it starts going in the other direction, it goes in a hurry.
Yes, it certainly does. And, Ryan, I tell you what, again, all my years watching football, I had really never seen a moment like that when you talk about picking up a flag. I mean, again, the referee comes out in the PA system, says pass interference, lets everybody, you know, in the stadium and everybody at home know that that's what the call is being made. And then all of a sudden it was weird because right after that, you know, a few more seconds pass by and I'm seeing fourth down flash across the screen. I'm like, whoa, what in the world just happened here? I mean, how does the NFL look right now as far as from a national perception standpoint? Because I tell you what, they're getting bashed left and right from what I see, Rod.
Now, and I'll tell you what's more unique about this play is not only was it overturned after it was announced, but the ball was also marked. So the ball is marked to play. The next play is ready to go. And then all of a sudden you see all of this action and balls move back. And generally in that, you get an explanation from the referee, even just for clarification's sake, to say, hey, we're going to waive off this penalty and here's why. But there's no explanation, no nothing. And that's what's leading to a lot of these kind of collusion and conspiracy theorists who are saying that something else is going on because there was no explanation offered as to why. And again, if you go through all of that series of events and all of the experts and former officials are saying the same thing, once you announce it, you're kind of at the point of no return right there. You've announced it. You've marked the ball. You're ready for the next play. And even if someone comes up with compelling evidence to say, hey, I don't think there's enough to call that pass interference, that you go along with it at that point because you've already done everything else. And even if you disagree with the pass interference call, you've gone in that direction. You've gone too far, and you can't just turn around and just say, oh, okay, we're just going to wave this thing off, and it's going to be fourth down. And that's what looks really shady about it is that the way that was done, it was done after the fact. And again, if anybody's watched a lot of football and you've seen that plays have been overturned or flags have been waved off, the official generally will explain what happened with that. You see it a lot of time with intentional grounding. They'll explain why it wasn't, or intentional grounding, offsides, false start, something. They made contact with a defensive player. Something happened, and they'll explain that to you. There was none of that, and that's why this really looks fishy to a lot of people.
Yes, you're very, very right. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. Again, there was no explanation. It just kind of just ensued from there. Now, again, and Rod, I look at your Twitter page, and you tweet a lot as well. I'm always on Twitter looking at what people are tweeting through throughout an entire game and just seeing the reaction from that moment. I feel as though there are a lot of Detroit Lions fans out there during that moment, and even listening right out there right now, that, yeah, blame the refs for this loss. Can you totally blame the refs for this loss, Rod?
You can't totally. It's really, like I said earlier, it's the thing that starts the momentum going the other way. Certainly the Sam Martin shank punt for 10 yards, the defensive holding on DeAndre Levy, missing some assignments. You talk about a holding penalty that was on that winning touchdown play that Tony Romo had all that time to throw. Well, it's because he might have had a little bit of extra time on a Dallas holding penalty that just didn't get called. Mm-hmm. There were so many other things like that. And Coach Jim Caldwell said in the presser last night, too, that wasn't the only play that decided that game. There were other things that happened. But when you look at what, if that play is called correctly, or not even called correctly, if they continue with what they did and didn't have this sort of mysterious turnaround with that, then the Lions are trending in a way that they should be able to win that game because it changes field position at least 15 yards going the other way. And even if you punt after that, then, I mean, whatever. If you kick a field goal, then on that Lions' last possession, if they get a field goal on the pass interference drive, then on this last drive, even if Dallas scores a touchdown after that, Lions only need a field goal instead of going down and needing a touchdown, and they probably play that a little bit different. So you can break down and you can say one play, this play, that play, but certainly I would say the non-pass interference call was a critical play in the game. Everything could have worked out a little bit differently after that, but that certainly played a role in the outcome of the game.
Again, folks, we are chatting with Rod Beard, Michigan basketball beat writer for the Detroit News. He also covers the Tigers and, of course, the Detroit Lions. Now, Rod, I mean, when looking at that game, again, the Lions had a two-touchdown lead. It was 14-0 at one point. They started to extend it, you know, with field goals here and there. Now, for you, when looking at that game, though, I mean, how was Dallas able to chip back and get themselves in position to still come out and win this game, Rod?
They were a little bit more aggressive, and they started running DeMarco Murray a little bit more in the second half. You could see at the start of the third quarter that was going to be their attack, that they were going to try to run more. You've got one of the best runners in the NFL. Give them the ball. Get the ball out to DeMarco Murray. Get it to Dez Bryant. Get it to your guy, Jason Witten, on that key fourth down play. You're going to your weapons. You're going to your key guys instead of just kind of dinking and dunking around the field. You saw there was a more concerted effort toward that, and they got some pressure on Stafford, too, in the second half. They didn't. The Cowboys did not play a great first half. They played a much better second half, and certainly the reverse was true for the Lions. They played a pretty good first half and a not-so-good second half, and when you put those two things together, usually the team that plays better in the second half is going to come out with a win.
Now, you know what, Rod? There are many that look at this year. I tell you what, from my own expectation standpoint, I had no idea. The Lions turned a lot of heads this season at what they could do. And just, you know, looking at the late game comebacks they had, the resiliency they showed, the poise and calmness that the presence of Jim Caldwell brought to this team. I tell you what, as the year went on for this team and approaching into the playoffs, the expectations seemed to get higher and higher. I mean, I thought that the Lions would at least win two games and maybe bow out of the playoffs. But I certainly didn't expect, you know, a wild card loss to the Cowboys, one and done and out. I mean, when you look at this year, is this season a letdown? What should Lions fans take away, and how should they feel after what happened yesterday?
Well, I think they're going to feel like it's a kick in the groin for quite a bit because of the kind of salty way that it ended. But when you look at it overall, and as the time starts to heal some of this, I think the Lions will have, fans should have a different expectation for this team and looking like this could be a playoff team for years to come. A lot of the pieces are there. You've got Calvin, you've got Stafford locked down for a bit. You've got some of your defensive players. Sue certainly is the big question going into the offseason. But at least the mentality is there. At least they didn't tank at the second half of the season. This is a playoff team. This is a team that has a good coach that's going to go forward and be somebody to be reckoned with in the NFC for years to come now. I think that's the outlook that fans are going to eventually have to take with this. But certainly with the way that the year ended and this game in particular, I think that it's going to just take a little bit for that hurt to dull.
Now, I also want to get your thoughts. I mean, kind of a nice segue into my next question here, Rod. Of course, you just brought up Ndamukong Suh. I mean, his name is the big name that everyone is talking about. What will he do in this offseason? Will the Detroit Lions maybe throw the franchise tag on him? Who knows? And also, I've been hearing some chatter left and right about Terrell Austin, the Lions defensive coordinator, possibly leaving for a head coaching job. First address Suh and then go to Austin. What do you think is going to happen in the offseason when it comes to those two? Do we have Rod? Is he still there? I think Rod cut out on us. We're going to try to get Rod back. But, yeah, folks, if you don't know, again, Terrell Austin, his name has been floated around left and right. This Detroit Lions defense was stellar all year. Again, they had the number one rushing defense in the league. And, you know, again, overall, the number two overall defense in the league. So Terrell Austin has done one spectacular job with this defense on the Lions team, and many people are starting to notice. So his name has been floated around. Of course, there are a lot of head coaching vacancies out there. And also, what will Ndamukong Suh do? You know, he's a guy who didn't give us much throughout the season when he was asked about his future with the Detroit Lions. You know, he would always say, hey, you know, we just have to wait and see, talk to my agent, blah, blah, blah. But again, when you look at it, if they do throw the franchise tag on Ndamukong Suh, again, you're talking about $36 million in cap space taken up. So we'll see. Oh, we do have Rod back. So, Rod, I don't know. Rod, did you get my last question concerning Suh and Terrell Austin?
No, I didn't get it.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about some offseason moves here because I'm seeing in the rumor mill that Terrell Austin, of course, Lions defensive coordinator, that his name has been floated around possibly into some head coaching hunts around the league. I want you to talk about Austin and also the future of Ndamukong Suh. What do you think Suh is going to do when it comes to his future possibly with the Detroit Lions?
Well, I think that's a lot of Suh stuff is still up in the air. I mean, it's going to cost a pretty penny whether you choose to bring him back or whether he goes. He's still going to count heavily against the Lions salary cap. I think the tendency would be to try to bring him back because you saw in that second half when he was going after Romo and bringing down Romo with one arm and bringing down DeMarco Murray at the goal line with one arm, how dominant he can be and how he can affect the game and impact the game by himself. I mean, he's still getting double teamed and triple teamed in a lot of these situations, but he's still finding a way to be able to become a dominant force in the middle. When you get him, if you have Nick Fairley back next year, you have a great interior to that. And with Ziggy Ansah, you can just start building on that defensive line. And certainly Terrell Austin has pushed the right buttons to be able to find ways to utilize these guys and to make the Lions defense the number one against the run in the league and number two overall. That's something that not a lot of us have been able to say in our lifetime that we've seen the Lions be able to achieve those levels.
Yeah, that is certainly true. And am I right here, Rob, because I was just looking around and doing some research here. If the Lions do decide to franchise tag Ndamukong Suh, I mean, again, you're talking about $30 million, $36 million in cap space. Could you even fathom them trying that?
You almost have to. It twists their arm where they have to do it, and the number is so ridiculous, but the impact that he has, do you get that from the next man up, as they like to say? Do you get that from a Daryl Tapp? Do you get it from a C.J. Mosley? Does Nick Fairley even give you that if he's going to be your lead guy on the interior of the defensive line? Probably not. And is your defense that much better? You see how much better the Lions are with a good defense. It gives you so much more margin for error with the offense of the games that they weren't able to click. They only gave up 30 points in two games this year, so they were able to stay in just about every game. They only got blown out, really, in the New England game. That's about the only one that you can look at and say they just weren't in that game at all.
Right. That is certainly true. Yeah, I tell you what, Ndamukong Suh, he certainly looks like a man amongst boys many times throughout an entire game. All right, before I transition into the Michigan men's basketball team, I just want to briefly get your thoughts on Matthew Stafford here, Rod, because Matthew Stafford is a guy who certainly took a lot of heat last year. And it seems as though, you know, despite the whole pass interference discussions and conversations that many fans out there have been having and are displeased with, many people seem to be blaming Matthew Stafford crazy. I thought Matthew Stafford played, I mean, he could have played a better game, but he wasn't terrible. But many people seem to be putting the blame on his shoulders as well. How would you grade the growth of Matthew Stafford throughout this year, Rod?
I think he's grown a bit, and they've utilized him differently where they haven't needed him to make exceptional plays, just don't make mistakes. And we've seen that. And you talk about some of the other Super Bowl quarterbacks where just be a game manager, don't blow the game, don't make a bad turnover. We've seen a lot less of that from Stafford this year. And I think that's going to be his sort of growth and his evolution is to be more of a game manager, make some plays here and there. You may not make as many exciting plays, and you might not throw it up to Calvin quite as much, but you're not going to have game-killing turnovers like we've seen in past years.
Right, certainly true. All right, Rod. Well, again, I want to talk about the Michigan men's basketball team just a little bit. Now, the team right now is 8-6, 1-1 in the Big Ten, losses to the New Jersey Institute of Technology, EMU, SMU, and more recently, Purdue this past Saturday. Now, many out there knew this team would take a step back this year with, of course, losses like Nick Stauskas, Glenn Robinson III, even Mitch McGarry, even though he was injured the majority of last year. But how surprising has this year been thus far, Rod?
Now, it's been surprising in some of the losses, but I think you can look at the turnover and just hope that the chemistry comes together, and it doesn't every time. It just puts a light on how much more special some of those previous years were, that they were able to do a lot of those things, get to the Final Four, get to an Elite Eight last year with some young players. This year, a lot of things had to go right, and it's not just there just yet with some of these young players and getting them to click in, especially when you move into Big Ten play. It gets a little bit more intense. The intensity ratchets up just a little bit more. And maybe as freshmen, they just don't get that just yet. And it's not an indictment on them in saying that this is going to be an NIT year, but the way that they're playing right now, they just don't look like an NCAA tournament team. And there's plenty of time for that stuff to try to turn around.
Now, when you talk about scoring, Rod, I tell you what. I mean, scoring has certainly been a Achilles heel for this team so far this year. I mean, just looking at that Purdue game, Spike Arbrick was the only player in double figures. Why has scoring been such a big problem this season? Oh, do we have him? I think he may have cut out on us. I think he just cut out. Well, we're having technical difficulties on this Monday. Kind of a rocky Monday. That's Monday for you. I guess, can we try to get him back, Alex, to see if we can try to get him back? Because really interesting, for those of you who did tune into that Michigan game, Michigan and Purdue game, I should say, on Saturday, this has been such an up-and-down year for Michigan basketball. They went through a stretch where they actually lost 5 or 6 games straight. And again, yeah, if you look at that scoring chart, Spike Arbrick, the only player on the Michigan roster on Saturday in double figures. Really puzzling stuff. I can only imagine how John Beilein has been taking this season. Again, they lost a lot of pieces, though. I mean, you talk about losing Nick Stauskas, who was certainly a sharp shooting juggernaut. Just unbelievable player. Glenn Robinson III, his athleticism was certainly something that is certainly missing on this team. But again, anytime you have Spike Arbrick as your leading scorer and the only guy in double figures, yeah, that may be saying a lot there. So interesting stuff. And now, you know, look at Michigan's season so far. Again, they're on the hot seat right now. Who knows if they'll make the NCAA tourney? They're going to have to start now. They're going to have to start now to start making that case if they do. So interesting stuff there, folks. All right, well, again, let's hit our first break, I guess. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, again, we haven't even got to our current Sports Queen headliners. So you get to hear that. We'll also dive into the Cotton Bowl and get our final thoughts on this whole Lions game. Again, the Lions falling to the Dallas Cowboys in the wild card playoff game yesterday. You'll get our final thoughts on that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports, folks. Again, I am your host, Al Martin. Man, again, it feels good to be back, folks. It feels good to be back. Again, we'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I'm sure many of you have thoughts on the Detroit Lions season. Again, as they fell to the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, the Cowboys now move on. You know, it was kind of a weird game for me. Because many of you who tune into Current Sports know that I am a big, 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 big Dallas Cowboy fan. But I'm also from D-Town, Detroit. That's where I was born and raised, folks. So, again, I got my hometown team going against a team that I've idolized ever since I was a little kid. So I just kind of sat there, you know, on my hands, just kind of, you know, not cheering either way. You know, it was a win-win for me, okay? The Cowboys won, I was happy. I am happy. If the Lions won, I would be happy. So it was a win-win for me. It was an entertaining game to watch. But again, folks, the talk of the town is still that pass interference no call that ensued midway through the fourth quarter. Again, a 20-17 game. Lions were driving. They had a chance to put the nail in the coffin, so to speak, if they score a touchdown or even go up by 6 points if they kick a field goal. Could have changed the outcome of the game and shifted momentum. That's what everyone is talking about. It's on the headline on just about any sports media news outlet you look at. An interesting game, to say the least. I now invite Alex Shark, the man behind the glass, to the show. Alex, how you doing, my man? Happy New Year. How was your holiday?
Happy New Year, man. It was great. I got to witness one of the greatest Michigan State football games in history.
Yeah.
In Dallas. Well, technically Arlington. But yeah, I had a great break, man. Enjoyed some warm weather down south, and now I'm just back in the sports mode. We just have so much going on. We haven't even touched on Jim Harbaugh. We didn't even touch on Harbaugh.
We haven't even touched. I'll tell you, so much happened over the break that I tell you, to try and capitalize it, we would need an 8-hour show today, okay? But unbelievable stuff. So, yeah, I just want to get your thoughts on this Lions game. Again, you just heard from Detroit News sports reporter Rod Beard and his thoughts on what took place yesterday. Again, this is a season where, again, you know, I was certainly all in for the Lions looking at the season that they had. I mean, being the number two overall ranked defense in the NFL, the number one rushing defense in the NFL. I mean, looking at the performances from certain guys throughout the year, specifically guys like Joik Bell, Golden Tate, which is arguably the biggest free agent signing of all of last year's offseason. I mean, he was a stud for the Lions all year. This Lions season was certainly one that surpassed many expectations and one that put a smile on many Lions fans out there. But again, it comes down to what you do in the playoffs. The Lions have not had success in the playoffs dating all the way back to I was still in diapers when I was 1 year old back in 1991. It's been a long drought for the Lions that now continue. And you better believe that this one is going to sting for quite some time. What were your takeaways, man?
Yeah, well, like you said, all in for the Lions. This was definitely, in my eyes, the most talented team that they've had. Aside from the stats, outside of the book, I mean, this team was talented.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason the defense was so successful is because you had a guy like Ndamukong Suh, who's kind of a once-in-a-decade kind of player. Maybe there's one other defensive tackle in the league. I mean, this is what Rasheen Mathis said yesterday at the post-game presser. He said, oh, there's maybe one defensive tackle in the league that can also do the same thing that Suh does, but he couldn't even name who that was. He just gave the benefit of the doubt. So for me, it says a lot with the front seven. I think it's the most talented they've had. But overall, this season, I mean, you have to look at it kind of with the chip on your shoulder because, yeah, I mean, they made the playoffs. They lost a tough game. There was the call. But at the end of the day, I still think that with the talent they had, I think they could have done a little bit better.
They should have done a little bit better in this game. And looking at back at this game again, because I'm sure you saw and it would probably had numerous discussions with maybe your homeboys or maybe some of your family members about this game. I mean, I got immediate feedback from my family watching the game because that's who I was watching it with. And I tell you what, they immediately just topped on and started blaming the refs for the loss.
Yeah,
and you know me. Right. I hate blaming a loss on the referees. I hate when you take that route because I felt as though throughout this game, and I won't do that. I won't do that in this instance as well. I'm sticking to my guns here because even though that certainly, Alex, was a huge, huge call that shifted a lot of things in that game. Again, you're talking about fourth quarter, 20-17, Lions driving to try and add to that lead, either with a field goal or with a touchdown. And I don't even know if a field goal would have done that much. They would have put him up by six.
Right.
Detroit, if the Cowboys still would have went down to score,
right,
they would have took the lead there. But still, even if let's say Detroit does score a touchdown on that drive, we're possibly having a different conversation here on today's show. But again, even though it was a big moment, the Lions had opportunities. Specifically, and Rod talked about the penalties. There were penalties throughout that game that were just like, what? Really? Multiple holding penalties were just head scratchers. The Lions shot themselves in the foot multiple times throughout that game. And you got to give credit to the Cowboys. And this is not my Cowboy bias speaking here. This is just from an unbiased, no bias goggle looking here. The Cowboys were clutch when they needed to be. Third and goal, that pass to Terrence Williams to take the lead, I tell you what, fantastic. Fantastic job by Tony Romo. Then you talk about the fourth and six, the pass to Witten on the game-winning drive. Bad defense by the Lions, great offense by the Cowboys. And then again, you know, you look at the holding penalty right down in red zone territory that allowed the Cowboys to inch closer. Now, again, you know, if you look at that touchdown pass from Tony Romo, when the Lions did take that lead, I mean, yeah, there was a holding penalty that allowed Tony Romo to get some extra time in that pocket. But again, when the Cowboys needed to make a play, they did. And I don't want to put this all on the shoulders of the guys in the zebra stripes. I won't do that today. I won't be that guy today, Alex.
Yeah, no, you definitely can't blame all the refs on it. I mean, look at the penalties. Detroit had one penalty in the first half. They commit seven more in the second half, 8-6. They end up losing the penalty battle. So you kind of have to look at those penalties at the end of the game. And after the penalty, to the pass interference that was called back, the Cowboys still drove down the field. They had fourth downs. The Lions led up big defensive plays. And to be honest, Al, I know you're saying this unbiasedly. I don't really think the Cowboys played that great.
They
got the job done, but
yeah,
they didn't
got,
play great.
This is the thing. The Cowboys got the job done when they needed to. Throughout that game, though, the Cowboys, looking at that first half alone, I mean, they dug themselves in a 14-0 hole, and then they climbed. As far as resiliency goes, they had a great game because they climbed themselves and still believed that they could win that game. And then if you look at this running attack, though. You got DeMarco Murray, who is the top running back this year in the NFL. The Lions were outstanding. 19 carries for just 75 yards. He did have one touchdown. It was a 2-yard run up the left side. But I tell you what, I mean, the Lions did a great job of containing him. But again, when it came to that secondary, the secondary had some blunders and just mental errors led to their demise down the stretch of that game. So, it's kind of a weird game in many regards. Hey, Detroit Lions fans are going to talk about that call up until the Lions do win a playoff game, because that's going to be a game, and that's going to be a moment that is going to live. It's going to be talked about for years and years and years. It's going to be talked all this offseason. You're going to hear it constantly brought up throughout our show. It's going to be a moment that the Lions are going to, Lions fans are going to blame on the refs for losing, and that's just the way it's going to be, and that's just how sports is sometimes. But again, the Lions certainly had opportunities. And even on that final drive, Alex, if you remember, you know, the Cowboys could have just sat on that on the fumble. I think it was Lawrence who recovered the fumble after it was knocked out of the hands of Matthew Stafford. Then he fumbles it right back to Detroit and gives them new life and a fresh set of downs, and the Lions still couldn't get it done on that last drive. Now, again, I'm not that guy to blame on the refs, even though that was a big call to shift the momentum. But again, the Lions certainly had their opportunities and, frankly, didn't protect that 14-0 lead.
Yeah, no, going back to the call, I mean, first of all, you know, we can even touch more on the call here. The ball was underthrown, okay? So even though if it was face guarding, you're still deflecting, you're still kind of protecting the receiver to getting to the ball that was underthrown. So regardless of if he was touching him or not, you're still in the route of him trying to come back to the ball. Second thing with the call, did you see, and no one's really talking about this,
the Dez Bryant helmet off?
Yeah. Well, not even that. His helmet was off. You can't run onto the field 10 to 15 yards onto the field with your helmet off, starts yelling at the ref, barking in his face. The ref kind of just brushes him off to the sideline, and you're wondering what the heck is going on.
Yeah.
So aside from the pass interference call, if you're Dez Bryant, that's an automatic flag.
The refs blew
automatic.
It. Yeah, the referees certainly blew it because, again, in the NFL, again, I understand the whole face guard situation, but still, if you, as a defensive player, if you are not locating the football when guarding and defending a wide receiver, if you don't locate where that football is, 9 times out of 10, you are going to get flagged. And that's initially what happened. I mean, the flag was thrown, and then the referee comes out on the PA system and says pass interference on the Cowboys. And then all of a sudden, things, you know, like a few more seconds pass by, and you see a fourth down flash up on the screen. I'm sitting there like, what in the world is taking place right now? I've never seen that before. And, you know, another aspect to this, another layer to this whole discussion, Alex, I don't understand why in the NFL, I think they do an outstanding job in the regular season with this. Referees travel in packs. They have a team that they do not break up the entire year. They have a crew, and this crew stays together the entire regular season. That allows them to build chemistry, allows them to just know each other and just know the personnel who you're working with. When the playoffs come, it's a free-for-all. You pick and choose different referees who've never worked with each other before, and you place them into the situation where these games matter the most. And I think it's a situation where these referees had no chemistry, didn't clear up anything, especially in those two crucial moments, because it wasn't just one. And I'm glad you brought that up, Alice, because, yeah, Dez Bryant should have been flagged. There was no huddle that took place at all, and you saw what took place. That can't happen. That cannot happen, because now you are gambling with championship hopes of teams. And anytime you start doing that, people are going to get really ticked off. Point blank, period. So, but again, I'm not going to blame it on the referees. Yeah, let's just say that's a pass interference call and it renews the downs. Hey, the Lions might have scored. Who knows? It could be a different story here. But again, that doesn't negate the fact that there were multiple other opportunities that could have changed the surface of this game. So again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Alex, I failed to mention that, of course, MSU men's basketball plays tonight at 7 p.m. at the Breslin Center. They take on Indiana, and we are giving away a pair of tickets to that game right here live on the show. So caller number one, whoever calls in first, 517-355-9527, will win those very tickets. Alex, before our second break, let's get the folks, the good folks who listen to Current Sports, caught up on the latest news with our Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Can we cue up that music, Alex? All right, folks, here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this January 5th, 2015. All right, well, again, as the Dallas Cowboys celebrated their 24-20 wild card win on Sunday, the Detroit Lions were left with questions. Again, you know the situation we've been talking about throughout the entire show. With 8:25 left in the game, Cowboys rookie linebacker Anthony Hitchens was initially flagged for a pass interference while defending Brandon Pettigrew. Now, this is what Morelli had to say, heads linesman, about the whole situation. Quote, the back judge threw his flag for defensive pass interference. We got other information from another official from a different angle that thought the contact was minimal and didn't warrant a pass interference call. He thought it was face guarding. Now, face guarding is a penalty in college football, but not at the pro level. Back judge Lee Dyer threw the flag on Hitchens far from the far side of the field. Head linesman Jerry Bergman offered the different and ultimately deciding view. Now, Morelli said he should have waited before making the initial announcement. All right, the Indianapolis Colts roared past the Cincinnati Bengals 26-10 and into the divisional playoff round. Now, the Bengals became the first team in NFL history to lose four consecutive opening round games. Now, Coach Marvin Lewis tied Marty Schottenheimer, Jim Mora, and Stephen Owen for the most consecutive playoff losses, that is six, by a coach. Now, Lewis also tied Mora, the former Colts coach, for most consecutive playoff losses to start a career and tied Owen for the most consecutive playoff losses with one team. Now, they haven't won a playoff game since January of 1991. How about those Cincinnati Bengals? My goodness. All right. The Colts now move on to play the Denver Broncos. All right. Michigan State All-America cornerback Trey Wayans, who started 27 consecutive games, will forgo his senior season to enter the 2015 NFL Draft. Now, as a two-year starter, Wayans helped the Spartans to a combined record of 24-3, including back-to-back bowl victories over number 5 Stanford in the 2014 Rose Bowl last year and number 4 Baylor in the 2015 Cotton Bowl Classic. The deadline for underclassmen to declare themselves eligible for the 2015 NFL Draft is Thursday, January 15th, 10 days from today. All right, the University of Michigan women's basketball team led by as many as 20 points, and when the lead was cut to 7 late in the second half, they made big shots in the final minutes for a 74-65 victory over the Michigan State Spartans Sunday afternoon in front of 4,520 fans inside of Chrysler Center. Now, the Maize and Blue had four players scoring double figures, led by freshman Caitlin Flattery's 21 points. Ariel Powers led the way for MSU with 26. All right, Michigan State looks to bounce back from the defeat as it hosts Indiana in a rare Monday night Big Ten contest. The game also marks the final contest of a 7-game homestand for the Spartans. Last season, MSU won both meetings with IU, while the Hoosiers swept the season series in 2012 and 13. Now, tip-off is set for 7 p.m. tonight. All right, the 2015 Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame class has been announced. Andy Simmons, Williamson Wrestling. Nick Simmons, Williamson Wrestling. Stephanie Smiley, Hope Basketball and Softball. Fritz Kellerman, Sexton Wrestling. Johnny Jones, Everett Basketball Coach. Kim Spalsbury, a Fowler and Grand Ledge track cross-country coach, Jesse Gallegos, Waverly football and baseball, Chuck Black, LCC track and cross-country coach, Jamie Wesley, Morris basketball, and Scott Kemp of Grand Ledge baseball are the individuals in this year's class and will be formally inducted in July. Now, they were joined by the 1960 Hazlitt football team and the 1977 DeWitt softball team and the 1979 Eastern Boys golf team. Larry Kronroth and Judge George Economy are the Dick Letts Community Service Award winners. The Pistons, they win five straight, folks. They get a victory 114-95 over the struggling Sacramento Kings yesterday. And Stuart Scott, longtime anchor at ESPN, died Sunday morning at the age of 49. All right. Well, again, folks, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 5th. Alex, I believe we have a ticket winner, right?
Yeah, we do. We have our first caller winner. He's calling from Jackson. It's Brandon Morrow.
Brandon Morrow. How about that? Brandon, congratulations. Again, he's just won tickets to see tonight's Michigan State men's basketball game against Indiana, 7 p.m. tip-off at the Breslin Center. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. You can call in right now to talk about anything that's on your sports noggin. We actually have a caller right now on line one. Tom from Lansing is on the line. How you doing, Tom?
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you.
I have a couple of comments for you, but first thing is I wanted to extend a Happy New Year shout-out to Brother Earl Robinson.
Yeah.
Hope he's still listening to the show. We all miss him.
Yeah, we definitely do.
Comment on Lions football game. If they had kept that call, the worst that would have come out of that is maybe another minute and a half, the Lions would have had possession of the ball to run the clock down. So it even if they didn't score, even if they wound up punting the ball, it at the very least there would have been an additional time runoff, which, who knows, maybe Dallas wouldn't have scored. But I don't look at that as the be-all and end-all to the Lions game, because when the Cowboys recovered that fumble and then fumbled it again to the Lions, giving them a new set of downs, in my mind, karma was in balance.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have taken that momentum from that break. They should have overcome everything else that had gone on. They should have went down, scored. So it was it was not a good play on behalf of the NFL referees. And the way they dismissed it, that's the thing that's really pissing fans off.
Right.
So normally the ref comes out there, he takes the hanky, waves it over his head. Hey, you know, we messed up. Sorry, blah, blah, blah. This is what happened.
Right.
You get that. I mean, it was a disadvantage to the Lions from the standpoint that, hey, it's first down. All right, let's do this. Oh no, it's 4-1. We got to punt. Just from that standpoint of them not giving the Lions enough time to address their error, you know, that was a big disadvantage. Hats off to MSU football team. Great win, and really, really impressive for the Big Ten. Two final things for you.
Yeah.
You and I spoke about 2 weeks ago. And I said the Pistons are going to have two knuckleheads, Josh Smith and Jennings.
Right.
I said one of them are going to go. Well, obviously the Lions agreed with us, and they made the right choice.
Yep, that's right. I tell you what, and you know, looking at how the Pistons have been able to corral five straight wins since releasing Josh Smith over to Houston. I mean, that tells you enough right there, doesn't it, Tom?
Yeah, I also had another question for you.
Yeah.
I called about a month ago, and I asked you about Madison Williams. Can you tell me what happened? I haven't really been following the women. I know they've had a tough game recently. But what's going on with Madison?
Yes, well, sadly, Tom, her basketball playing career is finished. You know, she's had so many surgeries on her knees that doctors advised her to kind of just hang things up. She is still with the team, though. She's helping out. I'm not sure in what capacity, but hey, if you go to a game this year, you'll see her on the sidelines, you know, cheering on her teammates and helping Susie out. But as far as her playing, she's decided to hang it up, though, Tom.
Well, best of luck to her. She's certainly an upstanding young lady and represents Spartans well. Thanks.
She certainly does. Hey, Tom, thanks a lot for your call, my man. All right. Again, folks, if you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about today, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our second break here, I want to bring up the Cotton Bowl win, as you just heard from Tom. I mean, what a game that was. I mean, I didn't travel to Dallas to cover that game. I was back at home watching it, and I tell you what, that was one of the most exciting, not just Michigan State football games I've ever seen, but one of the most exciting college football games in general I've ever seen. I mean, my goodness, to see Michigan State storm back down 20 points in the fourth quarter and get a 42-41 win over the number 5 team in college football in Baylor. I mean, what a statement. What resiliency that program showed. And what a way to end the year to remind everybody that, hey, Michigan State is a force to be reckoned with year after year. That was fun to watch. And again, you know, if you look at it too, I mean, if you look at the first three quarters, those three quarters were so alarming to me, because I tell you what, Michigan State did not look like Michigan State in those first three quarters. They struggled, to say the least, throughout that portion of the game. And I'm sitting there looking at this, and even looking at Connor Cook. I mean, Connor Cook played bad. I'm just going to call it like it is. He played bad those first three quarters. But what I love about Connor Cook is that the man has such a short memory. You know, if he has a bad quarter or has a bad play, you know, he may beat himself up for, you know, 5 to 10 seconds on that sideline. But I tell you what, he'll come back out there and have that same confidence that he had on that same play. Connor Cook came up and made plays when he needed to most in that fourth quarter, and it was certainly a thrill to watch. And again, looking at the MSU defense, I mean, Alex, I mean, again, you were at the game, and I tell you what, Michigan State's defense was not itself. I mean, they gave up 603 yards through the air.
Let's be real. The passing game was
the passing game.
The rushing game was
negative 20 yards on the ground. I mean, let's be honest. Baylor doesn't run the ball. I mean, that's just how that is. I tell you what, though. When looking at it, though, 603 yards through the air, I mean, that was so alarming. I mean, Michigan State just got beat countless times in the secondary.
It set a Cotton Bowl record, Al. Yeah. It was a Cotton Bowl record for passing yards.
Right.
But the problem with it, like you said, although they stopped the run, they really didn't get too much pressure on Tom Petrie all day. Really. The entire day, they didn't get a lot of pressure on Petrie. Petrie pressure. But overall, man, yeah, it was a phenomenal game. I'd say probably the number three all-time out of game, all Michigan State football games. I'd put the game at number one, the 10-10 game.
Right.
And then I'd say Clockgate at number two, and I'd put Cotton Bowl at number three.
That may be my list as well. From the games that I've seen, Michigan State games that I've actually watched, this would be numero uno for me.
Yeah, it was that good.
It was that
better,
good, man.
I think just better than the Hail Mary.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, just looking at how, I mean, being 20 down 20 in the fourth quarter, I mean, what a comeback. What a game to send out Pat Narduzzi on. Of course, Pat Narduzzi, defensive coordinator for Michigan State, he will be the head coach at Pitt next year, at Pittsburgh. How about that? So a lot of things happen. I tell you what, from a perception standpoint, of the Big Ten, if you just look at what took place these past 2 weeks, Alex, of course, you got this big win, Michigan State coming back and beating a number 5 team in college football. Unbelievable game. So you got that. And then you have Jim Harbaugh, who is a coaching legend, coming from the NFL, from coaching the San Francisco 49ers, and now announced as the Michigan head football coach. I mean, my goodness. I mean, just looking at just that name alone, Jim Harbaugh alone. I mean, that's such a huge name. And then you got Ohio State playing for a national championship against Oregon. I mean, the perception of the Big Ten just took about 50 steps. I mean, my goodness. It's unbelievable what took place in these last 2 weeks and how the Big Ten is perceived now. And I honestly think, Ohio State's going to give, Oregon a run for their money. I think that'd be a very good game. And Urban Meyer has done a phenomenal job at coaching those guys. I mean, you got Cardale Jones, the third string quarterback, coming in, putting on quite the show. Ezekiel Elliott had a big game. Spencer was unbelievable. Ohio State is for real, folks. And I think you're starting to see the dividends that having a selection committee and having the four-team playoff, you're starting to see the dividends that could pay off. Because there are a lot of people, let's be honest here, there were a lot of people that didn't think that Ohio State deserved to be in this playoff. I wasn't one of them. I like Ohio State being in this playoff because I think that at the end of the day, when you talk about the eye test, Ohio State was playing the best football, arguably the best football out of anybody in the nation. And they proved that they deserve to be among the four. They're playing for a national championship now, and I think they're going to hold their own in that game. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a good point, and you can't argue that if Baylor or TCU jumped in there, would they have played Alabama like that? They're very, you know, they've played them before. Ohio State rarely plays Alabama.
Right.
So I thought that was a good little test, too, because they're not really used to Ohio State's offense and their defensive schemes, different conferences completely. So, but yeah, man, what a surprise for Ohio State. And actually, it's funny, Al, on my way down to Dallas, next to me on the flight was the president of the Ohio State Football Booster Club. And he was telling me that he liked the matchup versus Ohio State, versus Alabama, the matchup with Ohio State, more than he would have if they played Florida State.
Gotcha.
So that he liked the fact that they can kind of go rough and tough with them. I mean, they didn't really spread them out, Alabama. They were more powering down their throats. And they definitely showed it. I mean, Ohio State's defensive front, I mean, they're just as big as those typical, you know, SEC kind of linemen.
That's an NFL front right there, baby.
They're physically, Ohio State's linemen are physically what the SEC linemen would be.
Right.
So they definitely matched up well in that aspect. But
yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I mean, yeah, Florida State and Bama both gone. How about that? Crazy weekend.
Can you believe or imagine if you're Cardale Jones and you're the third string quarterback 3 games before the Big Ten championship, 2 games before, and then now you're playing for a national championship?
Right.
As a third string quarterback, when would you imagine? Would you imagine at the beginning of the year?
You can't imagine that. There's no way. I mean, there were a lot of people that pronounced Ohio State dead after Braxton Miller went down. Nobody thought that JT Barrett would come in.
Raising my hand, me included.
Exactly. I'm in that discussion as well. Then JT Barrett comes in and plays out of his mind, and he gets injured. Then they pronounce him even more dead after Cardale Jones comes in, and then Cardale comes in, and they don't miss a beat. I mean, it is certainly remarkable, and I believe Ohio State's offensive coordinator actually is taking a Tom Herman. He took a head coaching job because just looking at the outstanding job he's done. So you got Tom Herman. He's leaving Ohio State now. And you got Pat Narduzzi. He's leaving Michigan State. I mean, a lot of moves are also being made in this whole discussion as well. So, all right, let's hit our second break, Alex. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by giving you our weekend winners and talking about the legacy that legendary sports broadcaster Stuart Scott will now leave. All right, folks, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, it's our very first fresh, brand new Current Sports to start the new year. And each and every Monday, Alex likes to play music from a certain artist. You call it Martis Monday, Alex, because you play music from a certain artist every Monday in and out of our breaks. But the catch is, that artist has to start, that their name has to start with the letter M. Martis Monday, never heard of this group. Who is this?
Yeah, Mansions on the Moon.
Huh, never heard of them. Never heard of them. From what I've been hearing, hey, they got some pretty smooth music though. So how about that? All right. All right, folks. Well, each and every Monday, we also like to bring to you our weekend winner segment. And I tell you what, Alex, again, this is our first fresh Current Sports in 2 weeks. Again, you know, so much happening over the holiday break. Let's call this our holiday winners, shall we? Because so much happened. Let's bring it. Here we go. Holiday winners starts now.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best. Oh,
All right, welcome back to Current Sports, folks. Again, this is our holiday winter segment. Again, let's try to look at what took place this entire holiday in sports. That's a long, long holiday, Alex, but a lot took place. I want to start off, and, you know, Tom kind of jump-started my weekend winners by talking about my Detroit Pistons, man. You know, I'm a big Pistons fan, and ever since they've gotten rid of Josh Smith, of course, Josh Smith is now in Houston. Josh Smith was certainly the cancer on this team. He's a guy who took way too many jump shots, not allowing things to open up offensively for the Pistons. He's not a guy who played a lot of defense. He was a decent defensive player, but he had moments in games where he would just take plays off. And, you know, since he's left the Detroit Pistons and was let go, the Pistons are now 5-0. They had a win, actually, against the Sacramento Kings yesterday. Remarkable stuff, and it just speaks volumes as to possibly what was the biggest problem on this team, being Mr. Smith, maybe. And now the Pistons are legitimately changing the perception of many out there and possibly in the talks and many people's mouths and possibly of making the playoffs. So interesting stuff. I wanted to shout out my Pistons, though. That's how I'll start this thing. Alex?
Like that, and I'm going to start it off with the victims themselves, the University of Michigan football program. I mean, imagine Jim Hackett, you're the interim AD, you don't know if you want to make the big hire before there's another AD, and they go out, they get their prize, they're number one, they get Jim Harbaugh, and, you know, there's all these talks about his wife being from California, is she going to leave, what's he going to do with San Francisco, they part ways through the contract, so a lot of moves were made for Michigan football to land their guy, and after this, I mean, this is it for them. I mean, this is it. There is no bad hire. I mean, this is the guy. So if they lose from here on out, it doesn't say a lot about the program, but if they start winning, they look like geniuses.
Yeah.
So you got to give it to them.
Yeah, that's my second holiday winner as well. You know, looking at, you know, Michigan got their guy, and they weren't going to be happy with anybody else. They got their guy. There is no excuses now. I mean, when you land a name like Jim Harbaugh, he's got to come in and start winning. Simple as that. And I think he will. Jim Harbaugh is a guy who is no-nonsense. He has the right personality for this job. He's a no-nonsense, this is how it's going to be type of guy. And not at all times are players going to like him, because he's going to be tough. Simple as that. And he's going to get a response out of his players. So that's number two. And I think number three, Alex, for me, our last holiday winner is us, the people. Because I tell you what, Stuart Scott, for those of you that got a chance to watch what he did on ESPN for 21 years, we were winners in watching that man work. Sad news, he passed away at the age of 49 yesterday morning, victim to cancer. But Stuart Scott changed how we talk about the game, how we look at the game. And I tell you what, gave people like me courage to just be ourselves on the air. Shout out to Stuart Scott. Rest in peace, my man. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic start to your week, and be easy, people.